This episode of In the Thick is brought to you by Mr. Belding. Just wait for it.
This has been going on in the black and brown communities for hundreds of years. But when a kid is in pain, we say, you know what? Lock him up and throw away the key.
Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And joining us from Denver, Colorado, is Gerardo Lopez. He's a former member of MS-13, and he is the current director of Homies Unidos in Denver, which is a nonprofit that works to stop gang violence. Hey, Gerardo, welcome to In the Thick.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are going to spend most of this week's episode of In the Thick speaking with Gerardo. But there's been a lot of news, so we wanted to do a check-in with our friend Ruben Navarrete, who is a nationally syndicated columnist.
Hello.
Ruben.
I hear you, like, very distant.
Well, did you pay your phone bill this month?
I did. I got together all my little pesos and rubles.
So obviously a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of reporting. Of course, now President Trump is on vacation.
A working vacation.
We do know that Robert Mueller's Trump investigation is headed to a grand jury, whether there's a vacation or not.
Right. And then there's talk that Mike Pence is running a shadow campaign for 2020. But we want to focus on two specific issues this week, things that aren't the day-to-day scandals. And we want to give you the takes you might not get from the mainstream media. So first, we want to start with the RAISE Act, which, if passed, would cut the number of legal immigrants entering the United States in half by 2027.
This competitive application process will favor applicants who can speak English, financially support themselves and their families, and demonstrate skills that will contribute to our economy.
Ruben, is he trying to help the economy?
He says he is.
That's what he told us.
Right. So this is the same Donald Trump who not long ago was in favor of legal immigration. He comes from the business community. They typically have been favorable toward legal immigration. And in fact, when he said he was going to build his big, giant, big, beautiful wall on the southern border, he repeatedly said it was going to have a door in it, a big, beautiful door, so that people who were deported could come back in legally. This is Trump doing a backflip now. This is a terrible, terrible bill. It's one of the three worst ideas I can think of in the immigration debate. The other two are stripping citizenship from U.S.-born children of undocumented immigrants, and the third is roping local cops into the enforcement of immigration law. But the RAISE Act is a terrible idea. The last thing we should do is limit legal immigration.
Another story this week is that the Justice Department is now taking on, quote, intentional race-based discrimination in college and university admissions. So, Ruben, what are we not talking about regarding this story?
The thing we don't talk about is the fact that affirmative action is now 55 years old. It's older than I am. I'm 50. And we have shown not a lot of market progress at the K through 12 level in terms of improving our schools and graduating more kids with better educational goods at the K through 12 level. So I think the debate that we all need to have now as grown-ups is whether or not it's time to end affirmative action, not for the benefit of white men, but for the benefit of intended beneficiaries.
Wow. You turn 50 and you just start dropping knowledge. It's like
wisdom, baby. I have spent 50 years on bended knee thanking white liberals for everything they've given to me. You know, muchas gracias, otra vez. But enough of that. And I would love to see liberals in particular and people across the board fix our public schools so that the Julios and the Marias and the Ruben Navarretes are not like some, you know, freak show that's so such a rare oddity. I'd love to get to a point where it's very common that people like us will accomplish the things that we've accomplished. It's time to ask whether or not we are actually being hurt by this program that they said was for our own good.
What do you mean?
This is the thing that isn't being talked about. Because it never occurs to white males to have this conversation because they think they're being victimized and they aren't. But it never occurs to Latinos because we're in the defensive position, automatically defending a program that we ought not be defending. Affirmative action lowers standards. It allows us to mask educational inequality at the K through 12 level where it really matters. You guys know this from our experience. My resume is really long, okay? The way you fix society is not by giving Ruben Navarrete 10 jobs, okay? Spread out those jobs across the board with other people. And instead of giving jobs over and over again to the same handful of people, we should be talking about empowering and educating a wider section of our community.
He's trying to take our jobs away.
I know.
Yeah,
he's a job stealer. All right.
Ruben Navarrete, thank you so much for joining us on In the Thick.
All right. Thank you.
So this week, we're going to do a deep dive into something that you've probably heard about in the news, and that's MS-13. It's an international gang. It started in Los Angeles in the 1980s. That means it started in the United States. And over the past couple of weeks, President Trump just can't stop talking about MS-13.
We are throwing MS-13 the hell out of here so fast.
And Trump has been talking about MS-13 as if it's a gang that infiltrated the U.S. from Central America. But we, like you said, Maria, MS-13 started in the U.S. and only then spread back to El Salvador when many gang members were initially deported from the United States. And the reason it was able to start in the United States in the first place, that was because many young people actually fled Central America to escape the civil war of the 80s that, last time I checked, was partially funded by the United States.
This is clearly not as simple as Trump as making it out to seem. You know, Central American gangs coming to the United States, be afraid. This is much more complicated, right?
Yeah, and even though MS-13 is not an immigrant gang, Trump has been talking about this nonstop to sort of drum up the fear against immigrants. So, Gerardo,
you grew up in L.A. You're actually not Salvadoran. So
correct.
Trump has got that wrong, too. This is not a Salvadoran, Central American-only gang. You're Argentinian.
And Mexican. Born in Los Angeles in Koreatown.
So you are like La Raza Cosmica.
I mean, that's everything.
Like everybody, okay?
When I would walk down the barrio and everything like that, I was able to eat at 10 countries in one different block because there were so many different restaurants from all kinds of different places.
That's L.A. for you right there.
So that's the good part of L.A. But there's a part of you. You're growing up as a kid.
Right.
Why did you join?
Well, you know, my mom worked in a sweatshop. She got paid about 5 cents for every button that she sold on a dress, and she worked about 16 hours a day. I never met my real dad. You know, he passed away a few years back. But, you know, my stepdad was in and out of the picture a lot. So being in the barrio right there, you know, we used to always play baseball. We used to always play softball. We were good students, but then the funding for those things ran out. There was no more after school program, you know, the funding's in the park to play athletic stuff. That kind of ran out.
And how old were you?
I was probably about 12 or 13 years old. And I joined the MS when I was about 14 years old.
Are you actually saying that, like, if the after school program, the baseball or the, you know, soccer or whatever, that if those funds had not been cut, that you might not have joined MS-13?
I think I might have been less prone to join it. My time that I had empty right there might have been filled in different places. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't because of that. I mean, it was also somewhat of a gang-infested neighborhood, and I became fascinated by it. At the beginning, I was scared, but I remember watching this show. It was called Saved by the Bell. And I would turn on the TV, and there were the high school jocks, and Mr. Belden used to take the kids, you know, camping and water rafting all the time.
Yeah.
And they used to go hang out at the Max, this pizza place, and their neighborhood seemed like it was nonviolent.
And you can use your cellular phone to order me a pizza.
Yes, hello. I'd like to order a large pizza with mushrooms, anchovies, and the hottest peppers you can find.
When I turned off my TV and looked out my window, the high school jock was the dude gang banging or, you know, selling the dope. You know, you become scared of it, but then you somewhat start blending into that stuff. And as a kid, I was also bullied, you know, and even by some MS members as well. So it got to the point where if I can't beat them, I'll just go ahead and join them.
So when did you say I'm going to join, or did you just kind of gradually start hanging with people, and how did it all happen?
You know, it definitely doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's a process that happens. You know, you get tired of getting picked, and not just by the gang. I mean, you know, you got tired of being profiled by the police as well. You know, even if you weren't a gang member, they thought you were a gang member because you lived in that certain neighborhood, the way you dressed or the way you looked. And, you know, sometimes there'll be rival gangs passing by, and you know, you somewhat joined it to have some protection as well within the neighborhood. So it was a step process, if you will, you know, that, you know, ultimately I ended up joining the gang.
What was your life like at the height of your being a part of MS-13? And I know that you can't talk about all of the illegal things that went on, but if you can, and of course we don't want to implicate yourself or anybody, but if you can give us a sense of like it's a job or what?
When I joined the MS, I thought it was going to be, everybody was going to be violent. There's going to be criminal activities going on 24/7. It was going to be nonstop. It was like the movie Scarface or something like that. you know, and it was totally different. You know, once you start getting into the gang, you start meeting these guys, you know, a lot of them just wanted to hang out as well. They wanted to be, you know, so I think my height of the gang was probably when I was in juvenile facilities, when I would go ahead and fight right there with the other gang members to go ahead and try to gain respect within the barrio. And every time you got in too many fights, you got shot out to another youth facility because you got in too many fights. And right there, nobody knows you. So you have to go ahead and build up your respect again and start fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, you know, or you didn't want nobody to think that you were weak, because if you people thought that you were a punk or that you were weak, you wouldn't be able to survive in there. And that led to several, you know, years added to my sentence because of that.
Most of your life was in these juvenile facilities, or what was life on the street?
I'll be walking down the street one day. Mm-hmm. You see a car passing by, and I remember it was late at night. It was like late one in the morning. And then, you know, I was walking by. I was going home. It was like at 2 in the morning. And, you know, you see a car pull up, and they're all like, "Hey, homie, you slanging?" Such as, "Hey, you're selling drugs or something?" And I'm all like, "Nah." And by that time, I knew that I wasn't going to go ahead and get shot. And somebody, you know, just a few feet away, probably just a, you know, less, just from the sidewalk to like the other sidewalk of the street. And somebody comes out of the car and pulls a gun out. And before they pulled the gun out, I saw the fire come out of the gun before I heard the noise. And then it was just like that. It was a pow. And then from right there, you know, you start getting these, I don't know, you start turning into this track star, if you will. You're able to hop over all kinds of different stuff.
Extreme sports, man?
Yeah, you're like the fastest Mexi RT going.
Yeah, if there's barbed wires up there, you're going to keep climbing. And I remember there was barbed wires. There was a dog barking, a huge dog. I mean, this dog was huge.
Wow.
And I was all like, man, I'd rather have that dog bite me than get shot, you know? So, you jump down, and I remember the dog barking. And as soon as I jumped down, the dog didn't do nothing. So we just kind of stared at each other, and I kept running. And you know, you kind of just hide, and there's like cars. The car just kept circling around for about half an hour. And then after that, you know, when I saw that it was clear to go, I just got up and, you know, started kind of ducking behind cars and just running home. I lived about three more blocks. You know, you go home and then your mom's waiting for you. You know, your grandma's waiting for you. You know, you find them praying or something, or you find them doing something. They're like, "Gerardito, ¿dónde has estado?" You know, what time and everything like that. You don't want to tell them about the experience that you just had, you know, but they tell you, you know, I've heard some gunshots. And, you know, I lived right in the neighborhood. So every time when there was gunshots, my mom came out to see if it was me that was dead that day, you know.
You ended up in juvie. I mean, was that because you were getting in fights on the street, or was that because you were carrying a weapon, or was that because you were selling drugs? Why were you ending up in juvie?
Well, there was a robbery. There was also drug stuff when I was a kid as well, for carrying drugs, you know, like small amounts of drugs, not no big quantity or nothing like that. But yeah, that would get me sentences in jail. And I was also be fighting in the streets as well, you know, and that would go ahead and get me arrested also.
This is the part of me, Gerardo, where I'm like, you did that to your mother and to your abuelita?
Right.
To your poor mother and grandmother. I mean, I know as a mother of a mm-hmm. of a brown-skinned young man, it's like that's the perpetual worry.
Right.
What would you tell them when you would come home at like 3 in the morning?
You know, at times there was a lot of screaming and shouting going through both sides sometimes, you know, and I didn't want to hear what they had to say. I think I cared more about what the homies thought than my parents thought. I looked at their love as unconditional love.
How'd you end up deciding to leave?
Well, there was a lot of times when you're thinking about it, you know, you take that moral inventory of yourself late at night, you know, once you see your family, your mom, your grandma right there crying and praying for you. And you're like, man, I got to get out of this lifestyle, you know, but then.
See, women, estas mamás y las abuelas, mm-hmm. they do have power.
You know, I got out of jail and, you know, there was more friends that had gotten killed, you know, and the gang wasn't as big anymore when I had gotten out before it got hyped up again. And there's this guy named Alex Sanchez. He's a gang interventionist. He's the director from Homies Unidos out in LA. And he came up to me and they started this Homies Unidos program. They're like, dude, you should just go to our gang intervention stuff. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to go ahead and go to that. And then two moms from kids that lost their lives came up to me and they were all like, you know, we don't want the same thing to happen to you that happened to our kids. And I was like, all right, well, I'll go ahead and check it out. And when I went to go check it out, and they asked my enemies back then, what are your struggles and your goals? And they asked me the same question, what are your struggles and your goals? Their struggles and their goals was the same as mine. The only difference that was dividing us was the name of the gang or a number or a color that we were claiming. And when they brought in the parents, their moms shed the same tears as my mom. You know, they went through the same pain. We caused them the same suffering. And when I started seeing, you know, the kids, I started having empathy, if you will. You know, I started having compassion for others as well as I did before also, you know, and I had compassion also when I was in the gang, but somewhat in a different way.
Hey, this is Julio. And if you believe in what we do here at In the Thick, bringing underrepresented voices to the national conversation, go to inthethick.org, click on the donate button, and consider supporting us with a monthly gift. And while you're at it, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Here's one great review from listener Graciela Esquire. An awesome perspective that lets me find voices that aren't on other shows. Every week I learn something new or say to myself, I hadn't thought about it that way. Maria and Julio are great hosts, and I enjoy it every week. That's awesome, Graciela. Thanks. And if you're a fan of In the Thick, try our sister podcast, Latino USA. President Trump says he plans to deport millions. So this week, Latino USA dives deep into the agency that has to fulfill his promise, ICE. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. How has ICE changed under Trump? And what do these changes look like in real life? Subscribe to Latino USA wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and with me is my co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. This week, we're joined by Gerardo Lopez, who is director of Homies Unidos in Denver and a former MS-13 member. Let's get back to the conversation. So here we are in 2017. The president, Donald Trump, says things like this.
I was reading one of these animals was caught and explaining they like to knife them and cut them and let them die slowly because that way it's more painful and they enjoy watching that much more. These are animals.
When you hear Donald Trump, the president, saying these things, I mean, what goes on for you?
I saw so many people change their lives that they were being called animals in that certain sense or anything like that. I mean, you know, I don't think nobody would have changed. I think people would have just built up more anger towards the people that are calling them animals and that are stereotyping them or are thinking that, you know what, these guys are just no good. They can't go ahead and change. You know, a lot of the stuff that he is talking about, you know, a lot of the stuff is hyped up as well, you know, and some of the stuff, you know, might be true also.
The day after Trump says something like this, MS-13 gang members, ¿qué están diciendo? What are they saying? The day after a headline like this, where animals slicing and dicing.
I think they're probably already being used to being called that, you know, from society. I think it's just another day in the office.
But MS-13 has committed violent crimes in the United States.
Correct.
MS-13 killed 17 people over the last 18 months in Long Island, and MS-13 members were arrested. If we look at the Long Island case, for example, all the victims were Latino. They all come from immigrant families. They know that you can probably target Latino immigrants, whether you're documented or undocumented, and they might not report it to the police. MS-13 terrorizing immigrant communities because they can get away with it. What do you think?
Well, you know what? As in that stuff, again, I don't think that the gang is that organized to say, you know, we're going to terrorize this person because they can't get away with it or nothing like that. I think that—
Wait a second. The way the president talks about MS-13, MS-13 is like seriously, like totally coordinated. But you're basically saying y'all are giving way too much credit to MS-13. Like they are not that organized. They don't actually have like the daily talking points.
I really doubt it. I mean, I haven't been from MS-13 about in several years. But when I was from MS-13, the height of MS-13, I mean, I don't think there's talking points right there where we say, you know, we're going to go ahead and target the community. If anything, back then, I mean, we used to go ahead and there was rules within the gang that you couldn't target the people that live there. You know, you couldn't disrespect the elders. You know, you couldn't disrespect somebody if they were with their mom or their dads or, you know, their siblings, you know. But hey, times could have also changed as well.
If you look at these victims where everyone talks about Long Island, there was also a murder in Baltimore. the majority, I mean, the overwhelming majority of victims of MS-13 are Latino, mm-hmm. Latin American immigrants.
Well, you know, when I was gangbanging, you know who were the people we were gangbanging against? The people that looked like us. Everybody. Go through every gang in Los Angeles and see who their enemies are. They're brown people, too. But we're constantly saying and pointing the fingers, the violence. And why are people doing this? Why are people doing this? I could tell you why they're doing this, because of the stuff that we're not wasting any funds on rehabilitation. And we're so quick to go ahead and jail the problem. And we get infatuated or fascinated by this stuff, but we don't want to go ahead and get to the root of the problem. Well, the struggles that have been going on, the barrios, that the poverty and everything like that, the low funding for nonprofits to go ahead and help these people out. We waste more money in prisons and jailing people a lot more than we do in any type of rehabilitation. And when you use MS-13 or you use something like that, it's a sense to go ahead and just target the immigrant community. I read this newspaper in New York where kids that were posting Salvadorian flags on Facebook were getting arrested. They were wearing Chicago Bulls jerseys. They were getting arrested like that as well. Because I saw this stuff when it was the war on gangs back in the 80s as well. And the war on gangs pretty much targeted the Bloods and the Crips. But what happened? Everybody that was black in Compton or in South Central was pretty much getting profiled, and a lot of people were getting beat up. A lot of people were getting thrown in jail. So these disguises where we use MS-13 or the Bloods and the Crips and saying, you know, we're only going after the gang or we're only going after the violent offenders. That's BS. Because as soon as the ICE goes into the houses and say, we're after the guy from MS, they start checking everybody else that doesn't have papers, and they start arresting them. There was a study done in El Salvador in 1997. It was by 1,200 gang members from MS-13 and 18th Street. And they did this thing, and they asked them, why did you join a gang? Nobody said, because I want to chop somebody's head off or chop it up into pieces or do life in prison. Everybody said, because we want to be part of the Basile. You know, like the atmosphere of it. There's nothing else to do here but to do that stuff. But we need to start investing more resources in what the root of the problem is instead of trying to figure out or saying what's causing the violence. And once we get to the root of the problem, we'll start seeing what's causing the violence and helping people out.
It is interesting that you brought up ICE because, as you know, ICE right now is being used as this tool to go into these immigrant communities on the hunt for undocumented Latinos who are members of MS-13. But actually, the majority of people who are getting picked up are not immigrants.
They're U.S. citizens.
They're U.S. citizens.
Close to 70% in the last gang sweep raids.
So it's like what you're saying, Gerardo, is open your eyes, because when they're talking about ICE going into immigrant communities, it seems to me what you're saying is that's exactly what racial profiling looks like. They will take everybody. They will swoop up everybody. But I know that there are people listening, Gerardo, who are going to say, yeah, true, true. But there are also like some gang members who are doing bad stuff. So how do you respond to that?
If nobody gave me a chance, I'm full of MS-13 tattoos, you know.
Do you have any on your face, Gerardo?
No, I don't have any on my face. I had one around my neck. I took that MS-13 off, you know, via laser. I had one in my elbow. I took it off via laser also. I have a big one in my stomach. I would take that one off too, but it just hurts too much. And the process is just very gruesome to go ahead and do that. But yeah, we have to go ahead and give people opportunities. You know, those gruesome crimes that they're talking about on TV, I mean, that's very gruesome. You know, let them have the due process rights. They go to the court, and if they're guilty, man, then the judge will go ahead and handle that. You know, I'm against violence, whether it's anybody committing it. You know, and especially people fighting against our own people or stuff like that, you know. But unfortunately, hurt people, and the hurt person is going to go ahead and hurt the closest person that they could go ahead and get to. They're not going to go drive 4 or 5 miles to suburbia or something like that. They're going to go to the person that's right next to them or the person that they could go ahead and attack, unfortunately. But this is another point that I wanted to go ahead and make out somewhat. You had government-made informants, MS-13 members, you know, coming around. You know, they knew where I lived and everything like that, with fresh MS-13 tattoos, trying to get me to get into criminal activities. You know, and these people also got into criminal. These people, when I said no or nothing like that, you know, these people will go ahead and try to get other people into criminal activities, and they will go ahead and commit these crimes. And the FBI knew about these crimes, but they were gone unpunished. I try to change and everything like that. I did change, but the thing was that sometimes they don't want you to change. You know, they want you to continue to be that bad guy. They want you to continue to say, you know what? Yeah, that's that guy that cannot change. You know, some of them don't want a success story.
I got stopped at the part where you talked about government-made gang members.
Right.
This does mean that there are Latinos who are getting paid by the federal
Absolutely.
Government to be
yeah.
gang members. That's a whole other level.
And you said the government made fear. And now you have the president of the United States sort of inciting fear amongst white people when he's creating this image of the marauding gang MS-13 literally spilling blood all over American white suburbs. How have we gotten here?
The way Trump's administration is going right now, I mean, who's going to argue with him and who's going to defend MS-13? This is something that he's chosen that he could only win on. I mean, it's to go ahead and try to win something in a failed campaign. A few years ago, there was a peace treaty done between MS-13 and 18th Street. The biggest gangs were the rivals. 18th Street is the rival of MS-13. Once they make this peace treaty and they were talking about the peace treaty and everything like that, the murder rate astronomically dropped, you know? And you know what these guys were asking for? Return in prisons? They were asking for some type of health care in there, better clothes, maybe some better food, and be able to see their families a little bit more often, you know. And the government started working with these guys, and the peace treaty went on for almost 8-9 months.
Right.
They started in the process of working with them and promising stuff, and that kept the peace treaty too. But once America got a hold of what was going on over there, they started bullying and talking bad about their Salvadorian government, saying that they were negotiating with gangs. And what happened? The Salvadorian government said, you know what, we can't negotiate no more. And boom, right after that, the peace treaty stopped and the killing started all over again, right?
Yeah.
But when we find the solution to a problem, you know, it seems like some other people, the other society wants to go ahead and say, you know what, nah, let's go ahead and mess it up again, right? And the real reason probably why people want to go to, we have a whole lot of kids fleeing Central America to come to the border, even to come to the United States. Are these, and they're being portrayed as MS-13 gang members. No, it's kids that are fleeing from the violence, the gang violence that's going on over there, to try to get a better life, to stay alive. I mean, imagine if you have kids, you know, telling your kid, you know what, just make that trip now, man. You're going to have a better life over here, because if you stay over here, you're going to die.
Dude.
And then you have these kids not wanting to die. The human being wants to go ahead and live. I want to live. They want to live just like I want to live. And you guys want to go ahead and live too. 5 or 10 years from now, we're going to be right back in the same place. And people are going to ask me, wow, so tell me stories about MS-13. You know, let's start talking stories about rehabilitation.
All right, and for our final segment, instead of mic drop, Julio and I each want to ask you one final question. So first, I'm wondering, when you talk to gang members, what kind of things are you actually saying to them? What do you actually say?
I'm always told, Gerardo, how do you talk to gang members? What do you tell them? And I'm like, dude, you talk to a gang member the same that you talk to any other person. These people didn't come out of their mom's wombs as MS-13 members or Bloods or Crips. They came out as human beings.
You know,
if you get to know that person, you know, some people might not like my Chicano barrio accent. Why does he talk like that? You know, or why does he dress like that? It seems like the brown and black people, no matter how we change or whatever we do, they're always trying to make us change and make us change. That leads youth into the confusion and saying, okay, then who the heck am I? Who do you want me to be? The kid starts to say, you know what? I don't have an identity. But those gang members don't have one either. And they feel like I do. They walk like I do. And they're ostracized from society like I am. So you know what? I fit in with them.
So what about the crimes? What about the crimes that MS-13 has done against the Latino community?
And the victims.
What do gang members tell the Latino community?
You know, that conversation right there is called restorative justice. You know, those people that got killed in New York, you know, I feel for their family, man. What do you tell them? There's nothing that you could tell them to go ahead and do bad. But at the same time, you know, I feel when everybody dies, you know, not if it's only gang involved, but also people that die through police brutality. This has been going on in the black and brown communities for hundreds of years, you know. But the only solution that we find when a kid is in pain or a person is in pain, we say, you know what, lock them up and throw away the key.
Gerardo Lopez, director of Homies Unidos in Denver. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on In the Thick. We really appreciate your voice and your perspective.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us, because this really does help other listeners to find us. So help us out. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. And of course, tell your familia and friends to listen. Our producer is Noam Hassenfeld. Our senior editor is Nadia Raymond. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. Some of our music is composed by Noam. And the other music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kept, and ZZK Records. We'll see you next time on In the Thick. Thanks for listening. Nos vemos.
Ciao. Airbnb at night, and then studio by day. Oh, I love it.